Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother Barney. How are you, Barney?
I'm good, man, yes. I'm excited for this episode. Change of system, you could say. Mm-hmm. Gone from three at the back to four. Yeah,
that's actually quite accurate. As Barney alludes to, we have multiple guests on the show today. Very exciting. I'll bring in Andrew first. Andrew, I've already made the joke about you being part of the furniture. It's very true. We did say last week, if Porto won, you had to come back on. They did win, although it wasn't that spectacular, but still, we'll come to that later. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show again. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks for having me. As always, it's a pleasure.
And we're very excited to introduce a debutant to the Long Ball Football Podcast, Mr. Simão Duarte. Simão, thank you so much for joining us. Simão is a journalist and a Ruku fan, but I'll let you introduce yourself properly, Simão. How are you doing, sir?
Albert and Barney, once again, it's a pleasure to be here. It's my first time participating, not the first one listening, I must confess. So... as you said, I'm a local journalist from Arouca. I was born and raised here. I'm 21 years old, graduated last year in Coimbra. I now have a degree in journalism. So to give you listeners a little context about me, because you don't know me, I'm a new player around here. Since the beginning of the last season, I've been working with a local newspaper called Discurso Direto, which translates to something like direct speech, where I've been writing about Arouca. I write about the weekly events, the home games, the press conferences, and also have an opinion column. And this year, I was happily invited by Mais Futebol, one of the biggest sports websites in Portugal, to be their correspondent for home matches. And to finish off, a little curiosity, aside from journalism and football, I've written two humor books, which is another area I really enjoy.
Oh, cool.
Fantastic. What a great introduction. Somehow you're very welcome on the show. And as he says, an Arouca fan, an expert, so we'll be talking about Arouca a lot. But as always with our debut guests, we like to throw them very much in at the deep end. So today's podcast, we're actually going to attempt to discuss quite a lot of games, probably a few more than usual, because there were quite a few interesting games, especially with some of the smaller clubs. So let's see how we get on. But gentlemen, let's start with Sporting versus Arouca, as Sporting were looking to maintain their lead at the top of the table, but were unable to after uncharacteristic errors saw them concede two goals to the away side and meant they were only able to settle for a point. Despite twice coming from behind to draw the game, it ended 2-2. Now, Simão, I was reading your article about the game in which you described how Arouca robbed 3 points from Sporting. So I'm interested to hear what makes you say that.
Well, I said that just because Arouca, not being at the same level of Sporting as dimension of club and also on the league, it's always positive to get a point, even though Arouca made enough chances to grab the three as a whole. I must say that sentence I've made was a little bit problematic, because most of Arouca people that read the article didn't agree with me, said that Arouca made enough to deserve the three, so they didn't rob one to Sporting, but lost the three. It's their opinion. I also agree with them, to be honest, because Arouca made enough to grab the three, specifically that last chance of Jason. I mean, I saw the game at a local cafe with a friend, and I almost saw, and I promise you I'm not joking, but I almost saw an old man raging and nearly breaking a table, because he slapped that table really hard. which was with the strong he had. It was what Jason should have had on that shot to maybe score, but also Rui Silva had to redeem himself from the mistake of the own goal. I mean, we can discuss if it was his fault or Santos, because Santos also sent him a rocket. That was not a pass, that was a rocket. And Rui Silva tried to dominate the ball, just couldn't. It was unfortunate to both of them.
Yeah, I mean, that chance for Jason at the end was pretty, well, as you say, it didn't really matter how the game had gone up to that point. That's a golden opportunity to win a game of football, which he was unable to take. Andrew, I think in some ways you could say that, rather than Arouca stealing the points, perhaps it was Sporting that gave them up in many ways, because there were some uncharacteristic mistakes that we're not used to seeing. Obviously, the own goal, which was spectacular and calamitous in equal measure. But equally, I thought someone like the captain, Morten Hjulmand, giving away a penalty in a manner that he did, also getting himself sent off. It was a game where, despite some good moments, particularly Trincão's goal, just some really bizarre mistakes that really let them down, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's what a team low on confidence does. They do things that's out of character. We know the Sporting team are low on confidence the way they've been playing. They're not quite what they were. We've spoken about this sort of the last few weeks. So just to go back to the first goal, it's almost mostly St. George's fault because he passes the ball back without even looking up. That's such a basic thing. We all get taught that when you start playing, if you're going to pass back to your keeper, make sure you look. And then Rui Silva, I'm not sure what he's trying to do. I don't know if he thinks he's, René Higuita or something, trying to sort of control the ball, and then he backheels it in. But he did redeem himself, I agree, because he pulled off some big saves in this game. And it was strange. It's still strange to see Sporting struggle like this against opposition that they usually dominated last season or even earlier this season. Højbjerg is struggling big time. And there were huge boos and whistles at halftime, and even louder boos and whistles at full time, just because of how bad they look. And I don't know how they get out of it, because I'm not sure if it's just the players not performing the way they should, if it's Højbjerg, just what you do at this point of the season. They're in a difficult position. They're only 2 points ahead now, so we'll see what happens next. But yeah, they don't look themselves at all.
I think Kevin last week spoke a lot about the physical conditions of some of the players in the Sporting team, and obviously we saw that in this game with Brancaccia coming off injured. Now he's out for 7 months. Gyökeres not quite being at his best. Still, that whole Santos situation. Rui Borges was sort of, like, it all seems like that could well be Santos' last game on the Rui Borges,
For sure, yeah.
The way he was hooked off after that error. And then suddenly, you're looking at a quite a depleted Sporting squad. I wasn't gonna make too much of a point, but it's still there in the back of my mind. I like just how, with Edwards going, there's a couple of players out on loan, isn't there? That I don't know. The squad seems very thin now, is what I'm trying to say. I know. Is it Pek Biel came on in this game, the Brazilian winger? But still, it still feels like Rui Borges is going to have to look at some more youth players now. And from the position they were in, it feels like the squad management has perhaps, I know you can't predict these injuries that have happened, but it does feel like the squad is really feeling it at the moment, and it's got worse after this game.
Do you know what? I think there's a difference when there's a team that's more system based, like Ruben Amorim's team was, where there were players that could play different positions, and it was all about what their sort of roles were, as opposed to like a positional thing. And then now it's more to do with you need to have your best midfielder on the field to make the system work. And then when one of them gets injured or one of them gets a red card, the next game they don't have Hjulmand. So that's just going to make it more difficult, and then the injuries start piling up. And I don't know if maybe the new system, Højbjerg system, is maybe too much for the players physically, because it was such a difference from the three at the back to the four at the back. I'm not sure, but yeah, there's definitely something in it with the amount of players that are now struggling physically, since the sort of turn of the year.
Yeah, one thing that they're definitely going to need, I think, is with, Vitor Yokez looks like he's still playing with some kind of semi-injury. He's not 100%, so they'll need Konrad Harder to play at his best. He looks to me in recent games like a player who's just desperate to score, and often that's not a good trait when the striker's almost trying too hard. So I was pleased to see him get a goal and get a goal in quite what looked like to me quite a controlled way. It was quite a calm finish, and he didn't snatch at the shot that he has done in quite a few previous games. And obviously, they still have got great quality players. Like I said, I think that Trincão's goal was excellent, and he's still playing at a very high level. But I'm very, as Barney said, I'm quite sympathetic to this idea that Rúben Borges doesn't have exactly the same caliber of player that perhaps Ruben Amorim had available to him. Of course, they're still wonderful players, but there's still a lot to work out. And Rúben Borges is trying to implement his own way of playing, perhaps trying to be a bit more pragmatic, and deal with some injuries. So it's not quite perfect. Simão, from your perspective, especially from Ruka's perspective, we talked about the fact that they did have a chance to win the game, although that would perhaps have been quite an unrealistic result going into the match. Given how the season's gone as a whole and where the team are in the league, is this still a positive result, getting the draw, getting the point, taking it off a big team, or did the team perhaps need even more than this?
No, I think it was a very important result because on the last 7 matches we made 13 points. We are still yet to lose a game in 2025. We haven't lost a single match this year, so it's always positive. If we look what we had on the start of the season, because it. We can't overlook the. Although our main objective is still staying in Primeira Liga as fast and as secure as possible, after 2 seasons where we finished in 5th and 7th place, I think that everyone thought we would be higher than we are right now. On that matter, I would like to comment that bringing Gonçalo Garcia as a manager was risky, because of his little experience as a manager and also no experience in Portuguese football. Which is something that I think is very much needed in cases like Arouca, clubs with limited resources and very few but dedicated personnel working in the club. And of course, we can't overlook also that Gonçalo Garcia had some problems, lots of injuries in the beginning of the season, good players that weren't showing their best form, and Gonçalo ended up being fired precisely when he was starting to solidify his tactics, his ideas. Vasco Seabra has been doing a great job. He is famous here, as you may know, by succeeding to other managers in clubs. But right now is much more than that, because he managed to adapt his tactics in the context of Arouca. Vasco Seabra has always privileged playing, for example, with three at the back, which isn't something that Arouca is doing, only on the first phase of the build-up. The reflex is what we see: a team playing good football and still invincible this year. And I would like to emphasize, which was something we also saw in the Sporting game, the growth of players like Chico Lamba, Fontán, Weberson, and also Pablo Gonçalves, which was a Spanish midfielder who comes from Valencia, didn't get that much play time on the beginning of the season. On the few play time that he gets, didn't show that much. But now he is being fundamental with playing behind the striker. So, yes.
Sorry, Samuel. I was going to, because I wanted to highlight Gazelle as one of the players, but I was just looking at that spine in the team of Mantle, the goalkeeper, Chico Lamba, as you mentioned, Taishi Fuki in midfield, Gazelle ahead of him, and then Henrique Araújo at top. Who can we credit Arouca for? Because I think your success has been your recruitment, right? It's been some really smart recruitment over the years, and who's the person to credit for that? Because I think. you put it really well about Seabra coming into the team and adapting himself to match the players. But I've always admired the squad building at Aruka over the past few seasons.
Actually, there's two people we can credit that for. One of them is João Pinho, the son of the president Carlos Pinho, which was someone that got famous because he is, let's put it this way, a little bit exciting on the touchline with the referees and so. But in the recent years, specifically in with Arouca in Primeira Liga, him and also another person from the structure that doesn't get that much attention, which is Flavio Soares, the director of football. Both of them have been very good in recruiting, not only in Spain, getting players such as Mujica, Cristo, and others that don't get that much play time in Spain and other countries with relevance that they're at. But in Arouca, they find a very nice context to sort of resurrect their careers. For example, Mujica has scored, if I'm not mistaken, more than 20 goals the last season he was at Arouca. That number of goals was what he scored, for example, on the 5, 6 seasons before he came to Arouca. So there are a lot of players that found on the club a real family. They feel comfortable and they get yet again confidence to show their best.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal few seasons for Arouca, and I think the thing that I'm impressed by this season is that you have had to rebuild. There was that great team, especially under when you qualified for the Europa Conference League, excuse me, and that squad that was built then was so great. And then naturally, when players start to leave from given the success that you had, it can become difficult to maintain that form. So the fact that the recruitment has continued, I agree. I think the appointment of Garcia as manager was probably a mistake in the grand scheme of things. But on the whole, the direction that the club's gone in has been very good, and I'm pleased to see personally Vasco Seabra at a club which needs him really, rather than a club where he feels like perhaps it feels that he's just there to do a job, whereas I feel like at Arouca he can actually manage the team to the best of his ability. So yeah, I think it's a positive result in this game, of course, and a positive season so far for Arouca. Let's move on, gents, and talk about a different game. Andrew, we'll come on to your team this time, Porto, as they earn themselves a first league win for new manager Martin Anselmi, beating Farense 1-0 away at the Estadio the Algarve. The goal came from Francisco Moura, who headed in just after half time, proved to be the winning goal. And a big, big moment, I think, for Anselmi in the game, which was marred only by a really, really bad tackle and injury to Vasco Souza at the end of the game. Like I said to Andrew, big win for Anselmi. Not the perfect performance, but I think this is important for him, really important to get that first win under his belt and start moving forward, because he'll be desperate to get this team playing in his image, and start getting more positive results under his belt.
Yeah, agreed. This wasn't the best performance from Porto. It was a hard-fought one, and it very much encapsulated sort of that fighting spirit of Pinto Costa. It was something that, it's the kind of win he would have been proud of because we weren't at our best, but we found a way to win. Now that's 2 goals in 2 games for Francisco Moura in the league, so he's on a bit of a run for a left back. He's been really good since his arrival from Famalicão. Anselmi decided to make a few changes, probably with that big second leg in mind. He started Damaso next to Denis Gull, which was a bit different. Denis Gull lacks the sort of tenacity and the that explosive sort of energy that Samu has, and you could see that. You can see there's not that much movement in the box when he's not around. But they did as good as they could In the midfield, we had Rodrigo Moura, who continues to impress everyone. He had a good game. He still sort of makes the decisions of a young player who's, sort of hungry and wants to score. He maybe takes more shots than he should. Fabio Vieira was playing a bit deeper. And Zaha Pedro started again. So that made my spine chill, seeing him start two games in a row. But he has to sort of figure out what he's going to do with his centre backs, because I don't think he trusts either. I don't think he trusts Jalo or Otávio or Zé Pedro that much. So he's trying to sort of figure out who he is going to use out of that three. The only guy that's kind of sure in that centre back position, I think, is Nuno Pérez. But again, Anselmi's just trying to figure out how to get everyone sort of singing off the same hymn sheet, if you will, and understanding the system back to front, because it is much more system based than it is sort of individual based, which is something a bit different for Porto. There's a tough couple games coming up. I don't expect us to be in any sort of title race. There's a lot of points to make up, but I was happy to see how they played, and despite all the stuff going on off the pitch, they still pulled off a performance against a very defensive Ferenc team, because they've always been defensive, like really defensively solid. They're hard to break down.
And you're right, of course, to bring up Pinto da Costa. We possibly should have mentioned that at the beginning of the show, actually. Obviously, we heard the news that Pinto da Costa passed away very shortly before this game was played, and there was some like a homage to him just before the game as well. Andrew, I don't know if you want to even just briefly talk about Pinto da Costa and the legacy that has at Porto. It's obviously a very difficult thing to kind of summarize, but of course, I remember speaking about when he was defeated in the last presidential race, and just like how long his legacy has gone back, not just at Porto, but his influence in Portuguese football is vast.
Yeah, so it's hard to put into words, to sort of explain how big a figure he is, not just at Porto, but in Portuguese football. He was at the helm for 42 years, in the 80s. He pretty much built the modern Porto. What we know as Porto today is pretty much all from his really hard work. He was a really sort of tough guy. He reminds me of like a Florentino Perez type, very ruthless and doesn't sort of take crap from anyone, and everything he does is in the service of making Porto the best team in Portugal, which is exactly what a president should do. I mean, he'll be one of these characters. There's certain figures at a club that will always be associated with the club, no matter what. Every time you speak about the club, about its most successful era, you'll always talk about that person. So Manchester United has Sir Alex Ferguson, Florentino Perez, Real Madrid. Maybe to a lesser extent, Jean-Michel Aulas at Olympique Lyon, and Pinto Costa is that for Porto, and he's also won more, way more than any of those guys I just mentioned, and he was in power for much longer. So yeah, just an amazing sort of guy. Every politician in the world is going to mourn him for a long time, and I don't think we'll ever see a person like that again, a sort of president like that, to sort of build a team and be at the helm for that long. It's not easy to stay president for that long.
Absolutely not. Yeah, really tragic news that we heard. So,
Yeah.
yeah, thanks for that, Andrew. And going back to the game, Samuel, your thoughts on the game? I'd be interested to get your take. Obviously, Ferenc, I thought, did quite well to stay in the game. Obviously, with the game only at 1-0, they had every chance to get themselves a point, but obviously, it wasn't to be. And again, we should discuss it. That tackle by Zé Carlos on Vasco Sousa was a really like terrible moment, and really killed off the game, because it was sort of in the last few minutes. But yeah, I'm not sure what you made of the game, and perhaps that moment as well.
Yeah, starting with the tackle. That tackle is absolutely violent. It's some sort of moment that we can only think that the player who did it, in this case Zé Carlos, he just wasn't thinking on what he was doing. And we had the news today that Vasco Sousa, the Porto player that unfortunately was injured on that tackle, will be out for the rest of the season. It's a long recovery injury, and of course, address him the best wishes for him, and of course, talking about also Pinto da Costa, express my condolences for Andrew and every Porto fan that might be listening to us. About the game, to be honest, I think that until the end of the season, whenever we talk about a Porto match, I think we will always think that the result was better than the performance of the team. We have to understand that the real Porto that everyone saw with, for example, when Villas-Boas, the current president, was the manager, this is very far from that. Most of these players, I'm sure, wouldn't have a place on most of the Porto teams from the past years. And although Anselmi is a manager which I investigated, and he really has a very nice tactics, he will keep struggling until he can actually bring some players that goes to that philosophy, his way of seeing the game, because with this team he will keep struggling, especially in the back, because we saw it a couple of games ago in Rio Ave, where everything collapsed with that. So to summarize things up, I think that until the end of the season, we will always be talking that the result was much better than a performance on a Porto game.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Joel, one thing I quickly wanted to ask you about, Samuel, was obviously this game is played at Estádio do Algarve, not Farense's home stadium. As a fan of a kind of smaller team in the league, we can understand why Farense have made this decision to play these games in the biggest stadium. Of course, I imagine there's more ticket revenue available to them. It's interesting to get your thoughts on that decision, how you would feel as a fan if the same thing was happening with your team.
Well, on the Ferenc case, I'm not sure about the distances from the Estádio de São Luís for the Estádio do Algarve, but on the case of Arouca, on our first fixtures in the league, we had some games against Benfica, Porto, on the Estádio Municipal de Aveiro, which is a little bit far from Arouca. It's still, if I'm not mistaken, an hour trip, and it's difficult because I can understand the club's perspective on getting a bigger revenue, which isn't something easy with teams like Farense and Arouca, but also, if the stadium they choose to get a big revenue gets too far from their real stadium, I think it gets the thing very difficult. On these games, it's always complicated to have the majority or even a nice cut of fans shouting specifically for your club and not for one of the big three. So if you put a game on a stadium far from home, that task gets more difficult. So, I can understand the two perspectives. I personally preferred when Arouca plays here. I think that Farense fans, most of them, would prefer the game to be at Estádio de São Luís, but we can't condemn the club's choices because the revenues are much, much important to clubs like this.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to sort of get as many perspectives on this as possible because my instinct is so against it. Just naturally, the idea that you would sacrifice your natural home advantage, if you think about how few advantages these small teams have over big clubs like Porto, Benfica, and Sporting, one of the few things you can do is bring them into your environment and make that as difficult as possible. That's a can be a huge advantage. But of course, I really don't want to write off the financial side of it, which again, these are not rich clubs. These are not clubs which have big sources of income coming in left, right, and center. So I totally understand that. I mean, yeah, maybe I have to try and find some Ferenc fans online to see what they to see what yeah to see what they made in a game. Barney, I don't know if you saw the game or what you thought.
No, I just had a couple of things for Ferenc, really. I thought Miguel Menino in midfield stood out for me, who they'd signed from Sporting's B team in the summer. He did a lot defensively and looked quite good in comparison to, say, Carlos's recklessness. And Ronny Lopes, who I feel like could have a good time at Ferenc. He's obviously such a talented player, and he might feel special there because he wasn't really made to feel special at Braga. And I don't know. I just have a slight feeling that, for the run-in, he might become an important player for them. They need, we've talked about their winter business and bringing the amount of players they brought in G start up top in this game, but they need goals drastically. I think Andrew said it right. They're quite a defensive team, but they need people like Ronny Lopes and G to make something happen for them. So yeah, hopefully they can do it.
Yeah, let's hope so. Gentlemen, I'm aware we're going to try and discuss multiple games. So let's crack on and make haste and talk about the Minho derby, one of the biggest derbies in Portugal. My personal favourite game in the league, specifically at the Afonso Henriques. I think I'll put my neck out and say my favourite game of the season. Sadly, I don't think it really lived up to expectations in terms of the actual game on the pitch for anyone who sat through it. I think we had to wait until basically the 94th minute for any real moment of excitement when Vitória missed a golden opportunity to break the deadlock and take the win. It wasn't to be. I think Vitória will probably be the most disappointed not to win the game after. The surprise for me being that how little Braga offered in the game, which was quite surprising considering the form they've been on. But yeah, Andrew, I'll come to you first. What do you think of this one?
So yeah, I agree with you. Vitória were the better team. Braga just didn't look themselves at all. Vitória needed the win as well. They've been on a pretty bad run, and they look really low on confidence. Now, I will say there was a goal that went in, the Nelson Oliveira goal. I think that should have been a goal.
I
If
was
that's
really
if that
interested to get the panel's opinions on this, but go ahead, please.
honestly, if that was like if that was for Porto, I would be losing my mind. That he barely touches. I forgot who it was. Whoever the defender was. That should have been a goal. And then the rest of the game, I thought Vitória played better than I expected them to, which was nice to see because they're a team that they've had this sort of ups and downs, and since Rui Borges left, there's been a lot of downs. So it wasn't the most exciting new derby. It's not going to be in the history books, that's for sure. But Braga, the same sort of problems we've spoken about before. They're not quite right. There's something about them that's never quite there. Carlos Carvalhal, is it the team? What's going on? It's definitely not just losing Bruma. Do you know what I mean? There's other issues. So yeah, not much to say other than pretty good for Vitória. If they play like this the next few games, they could do something.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I can't. We can't surely pin it all on the fact that Bruma left, although he did play well for Benfica, which we'll come on to. But that was the real surprise of the game for me, that they offered almost nothing. If you look at the statistics, they had three shots on target, an XG of 0.11 in the entire game. Somehow, I don't know whether you agree, but I expected so much more from them.
Also, I share that thought with you because I was searching the past derbies do Minho, and I saw that the last nil-nil between Vitória and Braga was 4 years ago. And before that one that I just mentioned, the last nil-nil draw was in 2014. So it's not a normal result at all. And I think that the main thing that explains this result was that each team, even though Vitória played, in my opinion, much better than Braga, Each team only made 3 shots on target. So it's very few for a game of this magnitude, and it's very few for teams that really want to win a match. And but of course, if there was to be a winner, it had to be Vitória. And I must emphasize the exhibition of Telmo Arcanjo. He had showed very interesting things in Tondela, then which led to Vitória to buy him. But then he spent the entirety of last season injured, and now he's doing very nice things on the pitch again. He is a must-watch.
I completely agree with that. He's always caught my eye. I think the thing I was thinking about with these two teams is that they're both sort of coming out the other end of like huge departures. Maybe Braga less recently than Vitória, but if you look at Braga's departures this season overall, Banzhao, Musrati, Abel Ruiz, and now Bruma. And of course, Vitória, Mangas, Jota Silva, and now Manu Silva, Alberto Costa, and Carlos Cesar. They, huge squad changes throughout the season. I think Carlos Carvalho, perhaps to his credit, which maybe we haven't done that much this season, is, he seems to be transitioning to a younger team. Is it Chabrian, Roger on the wings, Horner second goal, Tsumba at left back. And then whereas Vitória under Luís Freire have gone sort of the opposite, really, with Oliveira up top for the last two games, Borevkovic and Villanueva partnership. I know they have obviously cashed in their best youngsters this window, but is it Diom Mercy Michel? It looks like an interesting option up front for them, and Relvas has been decided to possibly come in. I think for me, although Vitória, I agree with everyone, probably deserved a result from this game, I think they actually have. I feel more concerned for them. They're currently behind Casapia in the table. There's pressure to find results fast, and it seems that Luis Freire is perhaps looking to the experience rather than, some of the more exciting younger options. So I don't know. I'm a little worried for the direction Vitória going, and I sort of feel that Braga might actually improve in a weird way with this the younger players coming through and Carvajal is sort of adapting the squad as he has.
Yeah, I suppose the one advantage of Bruma leaving is surely this is the time when Roger Fernandes just takes that starting spot and bursts into life. And as I think he has shown signs of doing in the last few games, he was probably Braga's most dangerous player going forward. But yeah, I agree. Perhaps not Vitória in the best place considering how well they started at the beginning of the season and. They had Rui Borges in charge. Things were looking good, doing well in Europe, had some good players. Well, all of those things are kind of sliding away now. And as Barney's right to point out, 13 points behind Braga in the table now. They're 7 points of fifth place. They're behind Casapia. They're behind Santa Clara. So, yeah, not in the best place this season, albeit with quite a few games to go. That does bring us fairly nicely onto Benfica, though, because Benfica obviously registering their third straight league win, 1-0 away at Santa Clara. The goal scorer being Bruma, which was good, and he had an excellent game in one of his first games for his new club. It's a difficult game for the best of teams going away to Santa Clara, and the conditions were quite difficult as well. A dramatically changed lineup, I think it's fair to say, for Bruno Lage's side. Perhaps his hand was forced due to injury as well. Four debuts in the starting 11, which is pretty interesting. Four debut starts, if you include Bruma, I should say. But it didn't really seem to hold them back. I thought they created quite a few chances, which was positive to see. Obviously, came out victorious. Andrew, perhaps. It might be a case of injuries being a slight blessing in disguise if it means that Lage feels he can now perhaps make those changes that we know he was keen to make from what we've previously heard of him.
So I disagree a little bit in that I don't think Benfica were really that good in this game. They did win, but Bruno Lage is a guy that he is quite courageous in the way he sets up. Sometimes it's mostly to set up in an attacking way. So I'm not surprised that he sort of gave a few players his chance. I mean, João Félix was his meal ticket. He gave him a chance, and that was his meal ticket, back then. He's a guy that does give players chances. Starting four players that have never started, that's a big risk. especially the aging Belotti. You start him over your starting striker Pavlidis, who's the only guy that's really scoring goals for you at the moment consistently. So that was a big call. You start Bruma, who becomes the difference maker. So again, hats off to Bruno Lage. Leandro Santos, who's an academy guy, doesn't have any first team football. And then Samuel Dal, that's it. Samuel Dal, who's the other left back. They had two left backs on the field, one playing as a left centre back, Carreras. He changes shape as well, which again is risky. You start Carreras as a left centre back. Carreras is not known for his defensive output. He's more known for his attacking. But you have to work with what you have because again, he's got a lot of injuries. Tomás Araújo is now out for a while, same as Bar out for a while. So he's also dealing with Dimarí is not there, etc. But I've said a lot of negative stuff over the last few weeks about Benfica on this podcast. I can finally say something positive. Bruno Lage, good job. He got the win. Santa Clara were good. I thought they played really well. But yeah, Benfica just had too much for them. And just go back to Bruma. It's his first start, but he's not sort of some unknown entity. We've been watching Bruma for many years in this league. And maybe he's a bit sort of enigmatic in the fact that he sort of has more purple patches, like a lot of talented Portuguese players that are sort of highly rated as youngsters, like Ricardo Quaresma or João Félix, and even Rafael Leão, kind of, these players that struggle to find their consistency, and Bruma's one of them, and maybe at not as high a level as the others that I mentioned. But he is good, and I think with the right manager and in the right conditions, he can probably, perform really well.
I think that's a very interesting point about Bruma, and I do wonder, with the greatest of respect to Braga, whether the kind of prospect for him of being the main man at a club like Benfica is just perhaps a little bit more motivating, a little bit more mouth-watering. The idea that he could maybe, although he's getting on a bit in his career, he's not old, of course, but he's not a young player anymore. Maybe that kind of one more opportunity to be a big player at a big club could be.
I think he's like 27 or 28. I'm not sure. Something like that, right? Yeah. So he's got some. Oh, he's 30. Jeez, that snuck up on me. He's 30.
But yeah,
All
exactly. Well,
right.
there you go. Exactly. So one kind of last opportunity to be the top dog might be motivating to him. Smell, look, it's been a sticky season for Benfica. Although they do find themselves 2 points only behind the league leaders, they've still got Sporting to play. Do you think they needed some kind of fresh faces, some kind of changes in order to improve?
Yes, and also the Benfica fans also feel that because they're always asking for some new faces, like for example Sheldrup, who is only being a regular starter this phase of the season. Rolhyser has left the club when Bruno Lage said he had a plan for him. Everyone thought it was a plan for playing in Benfica. But we saw that the plan was going to Brazil. There wasn't any plan for Rolhyser, and I fear that there isn't any plan also for Prestiani, a player that I saw on the few games he played for the B side, and I enjoyed watching Prestiani playing, specifically on some sort of 10 role, but it seems that he won't have as soon as we think a place on the team. It was a well-balanced game between Santa Clara and Benfica. Good chances for both teams. Benfica wasn't having luck in the finalization. Belotti, which is if I may say, a signing I'm yet to understand. He missed a glaring opportunity. Then Antonio Silva hit the bar. Santa Clara, which is being for me one of the good surprises of this season. It isn't a lot of teams that go up from the Segunda Liga to the Primeira Liga and on their comeback season get as many points on this phase and the fifth place as Santa Clara is doing. They had enough chances to grab a goal or two, but they faced a giant Rubin. It was just it. because Santa Clara had many, many chances in quality and quantity, but Trubin was enormous.
Yeah, he's a great goalkeeper. I think he's the best keeper in the league for me. He's so good. So damn good.
Yeah, Barney, I mean, Santa Clara did well, I thought, even with 10 men to stay in the game. I thought it was although again, getting nothing out of the game, still an impressive performance.
Yeah, I think, I have enjoyed the defensive season. I think if I was gonna, I've talked mentioned a few times, but MT, the sort of, he plays the left side of the three centre backs. I think his passing is quite interesting. Created a few key passes in this game, and I feel like he's there to take a risk. I obviously we've seen Sporting move away from the three at the back, but and Porto adopt it. I just wonder if he. I think he's an interesting profile player. I wonder if we could see him maybe make that move to Porto if they continue and sell me that in the future. But otherwise, no, I think, we've talked about it several times this season. It's what they have done well is keeping hold of the players they have when they went down, and those players coming back up and feeling more confident and looking more experienced, like MT and of course Gabriel Silva up top, who always looks dangerous. So yeah, he's
Just
been all
a
right.
player who goes by the initials MT shouldn't be a centre back, in my opinion. If you're going by your initials, you've got to, he's got to be a goal scorer or a winger or something. Look, gentlemen, we haven't got very long left, so I think we should try and squeeze in two more games because despite all the draws and the 1-0s amongst the big teams, there were some goals in the league and some exciting games. And I think the highest scoring game of the week was between Moreirense and Casapia, which ended 3-2 to Moreirense. They were 3-0 ahead after half an hour, thanks to two first half penalties as well. Casapia did try to come back in the second half. They got a late goal from Cassiano, which made the game 3-2. But by that point, it was too late, and Moreirense took all 3 points. Andrew, we were discussing with Kevin last week. You said it yourself that how long it had been since Moreirense had won a game, and they may have played well, but they hadn't got the 3 points. Well, this was a good performance and a very important win.
Yeah, they hadn't won a league game since the 5th of December,
Incredible.
and yeah, incredible stuff. And then they have three goals in the first half an hour. Two penalties and that great third goal from Alan Zing. A really great game for him. A player that always performs well every time I watch Moreirense. He always impresses me. Even sometimes he quietly has a good game, and then sometimes he loudly has a good game, like this game. And Casapia, that first half were just sort of all over the place. They didn't seem like the Casapia we've sort of seen earlier this season, in the last few games especially. And then in the second half, it was sort of back and forth a bit, but Moreirense is definitely still the better team. They pulled one back, and then, yeah, like you said, the last minute goal is a very important one for Moreirense and for Cesare Paixão. I think that brings them up to 10th, which is good. They're not trying to make it to Europe now. I think that's sort of by the wayside now, but they are just trying to finish as high as they can, perform as well as they can, and they're playing some good football while doing it. As for Casapia, they've already kind of done better than anyone expected. And they're still up there. They're still sort of pressuring the teams above them, teams that are maybe better. So that's it.
I mean, for Casapia, if they didn't get another point this season, they would still have had a good season. I have to add, every time I hear the name Alan Zinho, it just makes me think of one of my English friends at five aside calling themselves Alan Zinho, but a fantastic player. So I won't I won't take the mick out of him too much. Simão, like I said, Casapia. Bad result, as Andrew says, not their best performance, but it's been a great season for them. It's a really, really impressive project, and the manager and the players doing great things.
Yeah, and if we do a little research, we can see that Casapia has been having exponential growth on the last couple of seasons. And one interesting thing is that even though they have different managers, Felipe Martins, Pedro Moreira, now João Pereira, which was a very nice coach in the third tier, Casapia has always been a three-back team with four midfielders and three attackers, even though they had different coaches with different approaches, each one of them. It's an interesting thing that shows us that more than each player that Casapia has every season, and they have very big players each season. They had, for example, Jota Silva. This season they have, I would say, Patrick Sequeira, the goalkeeper, is just like a Keylor Navas reincarnated in Portugal. Is fantastic. He's a fantastic shot stopper. So what I was trying to say is, more than the players, this Casapia side is a reflect of the maintenance of a very solid project in the Portuguese football, which isn't at all a frequent case.
Very true, and I think Kevin Fernandes was saying exactly the same thing last season. It's, you know, a testament to what can be achieved with a little bit of patience. Barney, I feel like this game was almost made for us, wasn't it? Two teams that we love. Cassiano with a late goal. It had a bit of everything, didn't it?
Yeah, I think I've had Alan in my fantasy team since week one and haven't changed it since. So when I saw that, it's
That's belief
unpopular.
right there.
Well, it's more out of lack of the yeah. Anyway, no, I think Mourinho needed goals. I still think, you know, I think was it as a the ex Braga youth player Cal, is it Cal, who got a few at the beginning of the season, thought like he could be the answer. Chetine as well was a good, I liked him when he was at Vizela. But it still feels like they have missed something in the striking position for a while. So I don't know, for Alan to get the goals, that was very important. Yeah, and then Casapia, I think, I mean, I of course I'm going to be focusing on the midfield with the departures of Beni and Telesco Segovia, but you know they've still got Brito is a good player, and they didn't sort of look too well. Maybe the change was perhaps why they struggled at the beginning of the game, but you know that's perhaps always going to happen.
And also, if you see, even though Beni has departed and he was a crucial player on Casapia's team, I think that they have not the perfect replacement because they are two different midfielders, but I'm hoping to see more of Pablo Roberto right now. The few games he had last season, mostly, I really enjoyed watching him.
Yeah, plenty to keep an eye on with Casapia. I very, very quickly, guys, after last week's show, we have to just give a second to talk about Lito Vidigal's first game in charge of Boavista. Sadly, no fairy tale start to his reign at Boavista. They fell to a 1-0 defeat against relegation rivals Estrela Amadora. Rodrigo Pinho with the goal for Estrela just before half time. To touch on this game seriously, just briefly, of course, it's still an important game in terms of the relegation battle. So this would have been a big blow to Boavista's survival hopes, you know, because it's against a relegation rival and they are running out of time to mount an unlikely survival bid.
Yeah, it was. We saw a bunch of players giving all they have, but even that wasn't enough for Boavista. They have a very, very serious case of a team that of a problem that transcends into the team, which is the club itself, with all the transfer bans and the unusual stuff from the beginning of the season. And I fear that an historic club like Boavista, even though they managed to stay in Primeira Liga on the field, I fear that they can't do it off the field in administration and the rules of finances and so on. And you know, I purposely talked more about the general state of the club itself because the game itself, being honest, it wasn't just at all great. We saw many direct football, which wasn't not only nice to watch, but it wasn't nice to the team itself. I can only remember, for example, the Bosenic's rocket, which should have been a goal. And if it was, it would have been the goal of this round, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got to get used to a bit of direct football with Leeds around. Andrew, I think I'm right in saying this is a rare opportunity to ask you about a team I don't think we've spoken about this season in Estrela de Amadora. Their first win of 2025, very important for them. It takes them out of the relegation zone. They're in another relegation battle, as it seems they have been ever since they most recently got promoted. But maybe they stand a slightly better chance of survival this time.
Possibly. This was, like Simon said, not a very good game. This was kind of difficult to watch. A lot of direct football, not a lot of quality, and kind of a not a gift of a goal, but César in Boavista's goal, it's probably his last game. He had a terrible game the last game. This he's off his line for that free kick. I'm not quite sure what he's doing, what he's thinking. He kind of goes forward, goes left. And then, fair play, Rodrigo Pinho, nice little finish. But in terms of goalkeeping, I'm a big goalkeeper guy, and that was terrible. Anyway. But as for Estrela Amadora, it's really difficult to say if they'll have enough to stay up. The position they're in, they're not playing very well. I don't think I've seen them play well once this season. And eventually that's going to sort of count. They might finish sort of third from the bottom. They do have some players that are okay. We know certain players like Fabio Ronaldo or like Kikas, they're okay, but I don't know if they're at this level or at the level of this league and some of the other teams that are maybe even below them. If I'm talking about Ferenc, for example. So yeah, wasn't a great game. I think they're going down as well. I think three down, they are probably going down. Not to be super negative, but I'll just say that here now.
Yeah, I don't think you're exactly, putting your neck out on the line with that prediction. I
No,
think
no, no. It's as
most
safe
people
as
would do.
possible.
But yeah, we'll see.
The only thing I've got to say on Australia is that I feel like their squad, I don't know, some of the names, I know they haven't been playing well, but they brought on Jovan Cabral and Alan Ruiz in this game. You know, it feels like there's, I don't know. I like the signings they made from Real Ave. But I just feel like they could be better.
Well, they have Alan Ruiz, who's ex-Aroca, actually, talking about Aroca. Alan Ruiz was on the bench, Jovan Cabral, but I don't know if these are guys that are as good as they were. I don't know if
No.
these are guys that are kind of in this team because it's a team that'll take them.
I mean, this is the
I
team that
don't
gave Nani a shot earlier in the season. We
know.
should
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look how that turned out. Well,
I
on
mean,
that note,
I was going to say, but Boavista, though, that all of their signings came on at some point in this game, basically. We will see them at some point. Whether that's going to be enough for it. I agree with
they
what you said at the beginning, but this game was vitally important for survival, and obviously it didn't go to plan.
signed someone else today as well,
Yes, they
Abdoulaye Diaby,
did.
didn't they?
They did
Wow.
indeed. So yeah, the conveyor belt of new signings continues to roll on for Boavista. I think it will take a few more weeks before we get a kind of better picture of where they'll be at with the new manager and with the new signings. So we look forward to keeping an eye on them as the weeks goes on. Gents, I think we'll leave it there for this week's episode. A huge thank you to our guests, Simão Duarte and Andrew Batista, for joining us. As always, if you wish to follow their work, there'll be links to everything they do in the description of this podcast. But yeah, I think that just leaves me to say thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.